Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by Pernilla Hughes, author of the novel 10 Years. Author C.J. Major wrote about the novel, such a warm, lovely read with two characters you're desperately rooting for. Pernilla, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new novel, 10 Years, how would you describe the novel?
Oh, so I would describe it as a funny, slow burn, haters to lovers romance, which spans 10 years and roams from London to Snowdonia, from Brighton to Cannes, as Charlie and Becca, they try to complete a loved one's bucket list in spite of the fact that they hate each other.
Do you remember the original idea or impetus for 10 years?
This was a bit of a collaboration, actually, between my editor and myself. We were having a lunch to celebrate the publication of my second book, which is called Probably the Best Kiss in the World. And part of that story looked at the price of love and that, you know, all love comes at a cost. And that notion was still sitting with me like a hangover from that book. And she was looking for something that spanned lots of years. So we were kind of putting things together that we wanted to see. And so then we were thinking about this, a couple. I was looking, I write through dialogue in my head. And so banter and bickering really lends itself that way. And also to the enemies to lovers trope. And so I was keen to like maybe hold on to that for this book. And so it was really things coming together. And then we were thinking, you know, they need to come together once a year to honor this friend's request. But we didn't know what the request was at that point. I think we were talking about maybe it was just to check on her mum. And actually, as I sat on the train on the way home, I was thinking that is just, we can't just have them having dinner once a year because that would just be very yawny, very quick. And so actually that's when it kind of dawned on me, well, actually a bucket list then allows for different scenarios. It allows for comedy, which, because this is essentially, it's, you know, largely a book about grief and the ways that different people handle that. You need to find a point where the funny can come in order to have that juxtaposition of light and shade. And so the bucket list really became the engine for the book.
Interesting. Well, I wondered if you could tell us what about your original writing journey that led you to writing your first novel and getting it published.
Sure. Well, I worked for a company who made children's television programs. They made Teletubbies, for example. And you know, I had been around creative people. And then I left work because I was having twins and they were my third and fourth children. And I just couldn't afford childcare. So I was off work looking after four little kids. And I just felt my brain shrinking. And I had always thought that when I was working at Ragdoll, I thought, well, maybe I do have a children's book in me. So I did a correspondence course on writing for children, writing novelty books or pitch books. And really, it was just to keep my brain going, because little children, little babies, their conversational skills are poor. And so I just needed something for me. And so I did that. And during the process of that, I had two novelty books, you know, touchy-feely books. They were optioned, which was terribly exciting because it was kind of a validation there. And then the recession happened and the company changed their direction because touchy-feely books are very, very expensive to make. And so I then thought, well, I'll try writing picture books. And I did that. And I got some lovely rejections. And because I started sending them out just because I wanted to try. And then the way my eldest daughter then got older, I started writing her age group. So then it went to middle grade and then slightly older teen stories. And then I wrote. And each time I should think, can I write something longer? Can I make something bigger? And it was really, again, could I do it? And yes, I could. And I wrote a YA novel. And each time I sent them out, they were rejected, but they were getting rejections that were very detailed, actually. So I was really, they weren't stock rejections. So I was really quite heartened by that. I just thought, I just haven't written the right thing yet. And then on, I saw on Twitter a call for a competition for an anthology of women's fiction stories. Before that, we have a newspaper over here called the Sunday Times, and they had a travel section. And in this travel section were these little 650-word short stories based on travel and little clinches that people had got into, usually of a romantic nature. And I looked at those and I deconstructed them, thought I think I could write one of those. Well, I wrote it and I sent it in, and they bought it. And I wrote 36 of those over the following 2 years. So it really, yeah. And that was really quite interesting, because 650 words is not a lot. And so you really couldn't be precious about gutting your story down. And also when it went to print, I had one story where they chopped it from 650 words down to 300 words, and there was barely anything left of it. So, and again, you learn from that, and the editing, it has a purpose. So that was useful. And that's when I was doing those, then I saw this competition call, and 5,000 word stories set in a holiday destination. And they were giving three slots to unpublished authors, because the rest of the anthology were very well-known women's fiction writers. And I came runner-up. And at that point, I thought, oh, this is where my writing voice lies, which was incredibly slow of me. Quicker routes are available. And also I thought, well, okay, now I'm published. My writing CV has something on it now. And I need to write something full length, which was then why I launched to write my debut book, which was called Sweatpants at Tiffany's.
I wanted to ask you about your writing process for your novel, 10 Years. Are you someone who is an extensive outliner or plotter, or do you just have this idea, as you said, kind of enemies who turns into lovers, and you kind of dive into the narrative? Does it work for you the same, or has it worked for you the same book to book, or does it change for you?
I think it changes book to book, but what is quite clear is that I would love to be a planner, but I am more of a pantser. I think being a planner must be more efficient, and that is something that I would value, but I just can't do it and it kills me. What I do instead is try to plan, get in a mess, then think, oh, I'm wasting too much time planning. Just launch now. And then I go for it. And then within 10,000 words, I'm flailing because I haven't got anything. So I think sometimes it is very painful, but I don't really have a way around it rather than just through. So with 10 years, what happened was there was not necessarily an outline as such, but there was a structure to it. So the nature of the book is that we alternate point of view between Charlie and Becca every year. And within that year, we have two chapters, one which is kind of an update on what's happened in the last year and what they're doing at the moment. And then the second chapter is that year's task. The book had a kind of a structure to it, which meant I could kind of make a grid as such. And then I also had to be mindful of the fact that they needed to fall in love, and that's not obviously a spoiler because it's a romance, over the span of the book, from a point where they can barely tolerate each other to the point where this is it for them. And so really, I did have another chart where I was every year plotting, this is how he feels about her, that's how she feels about him, this is how they work together. And so that I had kind of reference points. But in terms of actually, I don't think I could really plan out scene for scene, because for me, I need to have an element of surprise in there as well. I think if I was, and I've seen some beautiful plans that other people have done where they have got this chapter and then a good full paragraph of exactly what happens in that. And I just don't think I could do that. I knew that in 2016, they're going to have a trip on a gin bus. And that would pretty much be it. really. And then maybe I'd have a detail for the update in 2016 that this is a Becca chapter, or it was a Charlie chapter. And these things have happened to him in the last year that I just need to mention. But it was also very much about just peppering details of what's happened to them in the last year, because if I was going over the whole of the year, that would also be very boring as well. So it was really about, what do people need to know that I can, you know, kind of impart, and how can I impart that in a humorous way? And then equally the task, what notions of what has to come across, and is this a deep chapter that needs some levity, or is it just a funny chapter that sometimes needs some depth in it? And it was sometimes about balancing that throughout each year, really, or each segment within that year.
What is it about romantic comedy that appeals to you as a writer and as a reader?
Why would you not want a happy ending? Why would you not like a character to be happy? I don't understand it. And books with ambiguous endings, or they die, or they lose each other. Like, they make me sad. Just no, I am absolutely geared up for books about love and laughter, which I believe go hand in hand. And so that's what I write. I think there's enough sad going on in this world.
Absolutely.
I just want to be in a happy place and impart happy things. And I'm sure people think that's incredibly naive, but I think there's enough going on outside to to satisfy that kind of appetite. So, no, I think for me, I grew up, you know, when I was a teen, I used to watch all those screwball comedies, Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And so Doris Day or Katharine Hepburn or Audrey Hepburn, and they were just, lovely. I love that. And so really, I think when it came to me writing, and really when my words started flying, were when I was having these characters where, yes, they had conflict, but the conflict was resolved in some way and they could be happy at the end, or at least they were laughing along the way. And for me, that's really where my joy lies when it comes to writing. I've tried a couple of times to write things straight, and it just doesn't work for me. I start writing, I just can't help the funny coming through, and it becomes wildly inappropriate. So it's just, no, I think I just accept that that is my lot, that this is the kind of thing I write. And if I can make people smile or laugh or just be a little bit happy, then my job is done. And I've had people write to me or just tell me that, you know, they've read my books at very difficult times in their lives, maybe in light of a loved one being very ill, or sure, other cases. And it has just brought a little haven of happiness to them. And at that point, I just think my job is done. You know, really, that's what I'm here to do. I'm not here to particularly educate. I'm not here to cast a light on awful things that are happening in the world. Other people do that. But for me, it's really, if I can just make people smile and be happy for a moment, then that's me.
I think you have a great point. I mean, I think that there's a lot of people who are angry and a lot of people who are unhappy out there these days.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
What writing advice, I mean, because you talked about, you know, your own journey of starting with, you know, these touchy-feely books and then picture books and then, you know, eventually moving into what really, you know, sings for you in terms of writing, which is romantic comedies. What writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels or trying to find their own voice on the page?
Oh, I would say definitely read widely and also try writing different genres, because sometimes, I mean, I honestly thought I was going to be a children's book writer, and that turned out not to be the case. So try different things. Don't be afraid to try different things, because none of it's wasted. There's things that I might have thought about back in my middle grade books that can appear later. So all of that, I think, is good learning material and craft building, because, you know, you have to learn your craft. And I'm not even remotely learned it yet, but I have a path that I can look back on and see what I learned in different areas. And I can clearly see that, you know, different craft points I learned at different points in that journey. I would also, my tip I generally suggest to people is that they lock themselves in a room with a pad of paper and a pen and a glass of wine. And then they write down every single one of their flaws, their personal flaws, and to be merciless. And no one else is going to see this list. So just honest, true honesty. And then after that grueling task, drink the glass of wine. Because at the end of that exercise, you will have a list of flaws that you can write about in a true and honest way, because you know them and you know how they've come about and how they play out. And I think for me, that is about, that's how you write what you know. That's always quite, when people say, oh, write what you know. And I think, well, and then I'd be writing about, I don't know, middle-class suburban housewife. Nobody wants to read that. So, but if I want to write about being an astronaut, should I not write that because I don't know it? But no, it's about writing the emotions that are relatable across humans. And I think that's the flaws that do actually bond us. They give qualities, of course, and also, but flaws are the ones we don't always want to look at. And I think with my characters in 10 years, it was really important for me to have Charlie and Becca be flawed individuals, quite spiky, Becca, definitely, but also to then show how they got there and why they are as they are. And that then just plays out during the story. And it adds more depth to your words, but also to your plot. And it really makes this lovely underlying web of meaning and depth if you are having characters who are realistic because they are flawed, but also you know how to write them because they're yours.
That's great advice. I don't think I've ever heard someone articulate it in quite that way in terms of
drink wine. It helps your writing.
Well, in terms of identifying your flaws, which I think is very true, because I think that that's a universal human experience, even though some people don't want to look at their flaws.
No, exactly that. And I also see it in reviews as well, where people saying this person, you know, this character was awful, and because of this, this, and this. And then you're thinking, yeah, but actually, if you really think about it, how many of those flaws might you actually recognize in yourself, but you don't want to? And sure. So I think there's elements of that. And anyone who says, like, well, I don't have that material, then you aren't looking hard enough, because we all have that material. Everything is free material, isn't it? It's within us.
Yeah.
And I think it was, I had an interview with Marie Sample once, and she was saying, you know, the deeper you dig within yourself and put that on the page, the better the book will be. And that is absolutely true. And I think that's probably what my tip there feeds into, is that you have all this material in you if you are just willing to recognize it and set it free. And plow, mine it. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Well, are you working on another novel now?
I'm on a little bit of a hiatus at the moment, just because just through family things going on. Mm-hmm. I have three children about to start university at the end of this month. So we are kind of packing up. But then I will be starting again. And I have a very tentative idea that I'm about to work on, and I'm wondering whether I'm brave enough to risk NaNoWriMo. With something that's still so fragile. But so yes, hopefully there will be more books to come, but it's too tentative at this point really to talk about it. But it will be
sure.
Happy, and there will be laughter in it, and there will not be an ambiguous ending. So that I can promise you those things.
What novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Oh, so I had this kind of a triple blast of reading what was it? It was Bonnie Garmus, Lessons in Chemistry, and then immediately onto Emily Henry's Happy Place, and then on to Ali Hazelwood's, it was Love Theoretically, which if you are a rom-com reader, those books will have meaning for you. But that was just three amazing books in a row, which kind of almost left me with a huge book hangover, because they were just brilliant. And I don't know, sometimes I will read a book and I think, I could never have written that. I should just pack up and go home. And sometimes, I mean, Emily Henry's Happy Place, for example, the idea was so simple. And I thought, why couldn't I think of that idea? It's, you know, so purely simple, but, you know, brilliant in it. Not to say it was an easy thought, but it was brilliant in its purity. And thinking, why can't I think of ideas like that? So it's really that. So there are books which are just knocking my socks off, but then at the same time make me want to kind of curl up and stop because my imposter syndrome is very real and my inner critic is mean. So, you know, those, but it won't stop me reading. It won't stop me reading because I think books are they are a must for anyone who wants to write, of course. But they are also my passion and my joy. They are my hobby, really. So yes, I will. But those were good books that I just read.
Wonderful. Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels and your latest novel, 10 Years?
Oh, well, the first place to start would be my website, which is www.pernillahughes.com. And then I am on Instagram at Pernilla Hughes. I'm, well, I should, Twitter, I just don't know whether that's still going by the time this goes out or whether it's, I don't know what's happening there, but I am there. And also on Facebook. And then I'm also trying out all the other social medias to see which one sticks, because who knows what are you thinking at the moment? where are you?
Oh, I don't know. Probably Instagram. And I know that lots of people look at TikTok, but I haven't fallen down the TikTok hole yet.
No, I have a profile on TikTok and I've posted a few times, but I am an old person. I don't think it's meant for me. I really. and I find the idea of having to come up with lots of little creative scenarios to then make the films of, and I don't have the technical ability to physically make the little recordings or edit them in any way. It just feels this creative time should actually probably meant to be used on the writing.
I feel the same way about TikTok. I look at videos and even videos that people my own age are making, and I'm like, I guess I just don't have a video kind of frame of mind because I just don't have the ideas to come up with them or the technical.
Exactly that. I mean, I don't know what buttons to press. I did have a tutorial from a 16-year-old to just show me what I'm supposed to do, but I just can't get excited for it because it doesn't come in any way naturally. And I think that is just when you're, it's like with memes. I look at them and I think they're funny. But I don't have the brain to make them. Does that make sense?
No, I hear you.
And maybe that's a generational thing.
Maybe so. Yeah. Well, again, we've been speaking to Pernilla Hughes, author of the new novel, 10 Years. The book is available now, so go buy a copy. And Pernilla, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, an absolute joy. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.